us to us. Truly a major milestone.
A celebration.
Yes. Of us. So here's what we're going to do. Gonna shake off the cobwebs and limber up. And stretch it out and do plenty of Pilates. Cause tonight we're gonna suck our own dicks.
Welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. I'm Chris, and sitting on the couch, as always, next to me is my wonderful co-host, Tom.
Hello.
And next to him, kind of semi-asleep on the couch, is Colleen as well. So you may either hear her comment or snore throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is our kind of bonus 100th episode kind of... Is it anniversary, you'd say?
It's a 1-year anniversary. Well, it's not really.
It's not, yeah. It's the 100th episode extravaganza.
Yeah, because we've been going for longer than a year. Mm. I think last week you said over 2 years, but it's nearly 2 years or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't even... We should probably fucking... It was, I think, April 2014.
Something like
was,
that, yeah.
Was the first
so we're just
or something like
a couple
that.
Of months shy of 2 years, but... Yeah, we've kind of hit that milestone if we watched the first 100 films in the Criterion Collection, so we're 1/7 of the way into it.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff we've done, but it feels like we have only scratched the surface. We've only fucking climbed to the foot of the mountain.
That's it. It's the thing of, it'd be interesting. I should check up. That's one thing I didn't do is I should have checked where the spy numbers were actually up to when we first started recording and how many new films have been added since we...
I think we're at the 700 and... around the 715, not 710.
Yeah, films. Now it's kind of close to... It's 800 or something now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. I think number 800 coming out next month is The Graduate, so, yeah.
Awesome. So, why aren't we doing... Why aren't we just getting on with it?
Yeah.
Like, studious people...
Because we're kind of lazy and we want to wake off from having to watch a film, I guess. That's my excuse for it.
I guess so.
Mm.
But it's also, like, the ego. We're just like...
A little bit.
It's a little bit
of
the ego. It's because
yeah.
You got to... You know, I think we've done really well and I've enjoyed it. And plus, I mean, for a little while, we've wanted to put recommendations out.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, just... Stuff that's like, why isn't this in the collection?
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, like, there's always going to be those films that can't be in the collection because they're owned by...
Yeah.
You know, fucking this, that, and whatever.
Like, a prime example is, why there will never be any Spielberg in the collection is because, like, everyone unanimously agrees, like, he's one of the greatest living directors, if not one of the greatest directors of all time. And, but his films are worth so much money to... Universal or DreamWorks or Paramount or whoever is the rights holder for those films, that it does not make sense for them to give the distribution home video licensing up to Criterion to put out an edition. It's sort of...
Because Criterion will steal their money.
Exactly. So
it can't happen. But there is films out there that seemingly there's no reason why
they
shouldn't be in the collection.
In particular, like sometimes Criterion in the past have kind of struck deals with studios like... back in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s, when they were kind of co-owned, they had a deal with Disney, which is Buena Vista and Touchstone, all of those, which is why we got Chasing Amy, The Rock, Armageddon. A lot of those kind of Miramax and Disney releases through there. For a little while there was IFC, so that's why we got things like Tiny Furniture, and I think that's how they managed to get some of the Guillermo del Toro stuff in there. Now I think they've got something going with... I want to say Focus, maybe, and which is why we finally have a Coen Brothers movie in the collection with Inside Llewyn Davis. So hopefully that'll kind of open the floodgates a bit more. That could be Fox, maybe. I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point.
We didn't do that. You didn't do research.
No.
Neither did I. But that doesn't matter. We're not here this week to do our research.
No. Although I did do a little bit of research.
So did I, actually. If you got recommendations, you don't want to just go in free-balling.
Exactly. But the one that I did some math for this episode, which is took me a couple of hours because I'm so fucking bad at math. I thought it would be fun to kind of look at how we've watched 100 films now, and we've recorded however many episodes corresponding with that. And so I thought it'd be interesting to see how many minutes of film we have watched while doing this podcast, contrasted with how many hours of content we have produced based on those minutes of...
All for free.
How much... So would you like to know how much time we have wasted?
Yeah.
He kind of looks sad and apprehensive.
Yeah. Some of it's wasted. Not all of the films can be good. Not all of 100 films can be good.
We have watched 10,646 minutes of film.
Holy crap. How much is that in hours?
So this is where the math gets a little rough. So it's roughly 177 hours,
mm-hmm,
or 7.5 days straight of movies.
God damn.
And from those films, we have produced 4,098 minutes and 8 seconds of podcast material.
What's that in hours?
So roughly 68 hours.
Fucking hell.
So we've done all right, I think.
That's like, how much is that? If I was to be paid minimum wage for this. Let me just do some more maths.
If we got a fucking, like, if we were an actual real podcast that was able to get, like, sponsorship money, like, and have bullshitty ads, like, brought to you by Squarespace.
Not even. If I just got, you know, paid a little bit, just the minimum wage to do this as a job.
Yeah.
How many, just say 68 hours.
Yeah.
Times, let's say, like, what's minimum wage?
$14, something like that, I think.
Oh, that's if you're working at KFC, man.
Yeah, but that's minimum wage. Like, you
for teenagers, let's go 20. That's $1,360.
Yep.
That's like, that can be by for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks, right?
Exactly. That could put you through at least the week you spent watching the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supplying
the chicken nuggets for a week.
I do like chicken nuggets. That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So we actually have 7 times that effectively to do.
Yeah.
To complete the criterion.
Theoretically, but I think we're going to fall into that problem of, like, the shifting runtimes of films. Like, the hardest one to actually work out was the Beastie Boys video anthology, because there wasn't a set runtime for that DVD. It was, I had to go and look up every single music video and how many minutes those were about it.
Yeah, well,
but
I commend your attention to detail, because I would have just done a guess.
Yeah, but then we've also got the problem of, like, eventually we're going to have to do Showa, which is a 10-hour documentary about the Holocaust. Like, it's shit like that is going to happen.
Well, but that's not fair, because like, if you're supposed to, if you're producing one weekly and you get to that chunk,
yeah,
of, let's face it, work, then we're going to have to take a break. Like, that's going to have to be like a 2 week.
We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk that show up, because
we'll have to have a break to get through that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's fucked up.
Yep. But no, there's a whole bunch coming up that I'm, like, in this next lot of 100 that I'm really looking forward to, and some of my favourite films of all time are in there, and some of my favourites in the collection are coming up that I'm really looking forward to seeing your reaction to, like With No and I, we get to do, which is going to be great. A whole shitload more Kurosawa. We get The Hidden Fortress, which is the kind of the precursor to Star Wars. It was like the inspiration for George Lucas to make Star Wars.
Oh, that's cool.
Straw Dogs, a Sam Peckinpah film, a whole bunch of great shit in there. So
Kurosawa.
Yeah, that's. Oh, I think that's possibly my favorite thing that's come out of the podcast. Like, how much Cole loves Kurosawa.
I had no idea who Kurosawa and Mifune were before this.
And now, did you hear that Mifune is finally getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Is he?
That got announced last week.
Mm.
Yeah.
I didn't know we didn't have one there.
It's about goddamn time he got one, though.
I love those two men.
Mm-hmm.
Even Big Bird's got one.
Fucking hell.
But, that's the future of the collection. But let's...
Yeah.
I want to know, I don't know if you've given much thought to this,
yep,
and I should have probably mentioned to you to think about this before we did the podcast, but what would you say is your favourite film of the past 100...
past
100 films.
That's an easy one for me, because we were lucky to do one that is in my top 10 films of all time. So Rushmore for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's that. I actually kind of pre-thought about that question. I was like, yep, no, it's just easy because Rushmore.
Is that, yeah, okay. The Wes Anderson film.
Yeah.
Number
65, I believe, in
yeah,
the collection. That's my favourite we've done so far.
What about... All right.
That doesn't count, because that was already one of your favourite films.
Yeah,
okay.
Let me rephrase the question then. What was your surprise hit?
Okay, the
last 100.
The film that I'd never seen before that kind of has made me fall in love with it the most, and I've actually rewatched it 1.5 times since we did the episode.
One and a half,
yeah.
So I didn't finish it.
I got busy, was doing some other shit.
Okay.
I would say High and Low by Kurosawa.
Yeah.
Probably. Because I'd already seen things like Seven Samurai and Yojimbo and Sanjiro and all of those. And kind of the main hits of the collection I'd kind of already seen before. So I'd probably, say either High and Low or Diabolique, possibly, as well.
That was a surprise.
I really fucking love that movie.
Yeah, High and Low is just tremendously good.
Man, there's so many. Like, Brief Encounter as well. Yeah. Yeah. What about yourself?
I'm going to say Fishing with John.
Ooh!
So not the film, but the six-part episode.
Yeah.
About fishing with John Laurie.
Yep.
I think it was featuring like Dennis Hopper at the end, which was outstanding two-episode part where they all take acid.
Yeah.
Well, it's inferred that they take acid.
The ice fishing with Willem Dafoe, where they died.
And then I think they're in the swamp with Tom Waits.
Yep.
And it's just so deliciously odd.
Yeah.
And it was... You know when you have something that's strange for Stranger Snake a lot of time, and it's hilarious?
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, those kinds of pieces of art, a lot of artists fail, I reckon, when they do the strange stuff.
Yeah.
Because you start to... make the piece too unrelatable.
Yeah,
it's too much
of
an in-joke sometimes.
That's it. Yeah.
But this one, John Lurie's show managed to through using the kind of the human stories of each one of the guests, it's always relatable, and it's kind of relatable on a deep level. You know, it's a connects with the core of kind of just humanity. I'm sounding a little bit silly, but
no, it's
true. Talk about this with Fishing with John,
but it's also like. Endlessly entertaining and hysterically funny and poignant, and you're right, that was fucking fantastic, that series.
And I was not expecting that, so there's the surprise hit for me.
Nice.
But I will give it a second shout out to High and Low, because I was close to saying that too.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of writing a backup to the Moot Bar and buying an ice cream.
Alright,
well, before you do that, Cole, do you have one of yours that was a favourite?
No, not a favourite. The big win for me out of the whole experiencing podcasts through you guys, the Criterion through you guys, is the discovery of Kurosawa.
Yeah.
That I've discovered that I have a massive love for Kurosawa and Mifune.
Yeah.
How many Kurosawa films were there in the last night? Like, I'm going to say four?
Yeah, well,
Sanjiro.
Samurai.
Yes. Sanjiro, High and Low. Yeah, I think that's it. I know in the next lot we've got Rashomon and The Hidden Fortress and maybe Stray Dogs. Like, yeah, there's... I think he's got like something like 25 films in the collection. It's fucking crazy. But,
yeah. Well, that's the big thing for me. That's the big thing for me, that I didn't know anything about them before, and now I've just absolutely fallen in love with them because of being introduced to it through this with you guys.
Yeah, he is one of the best... filmmakers that's ever lived. So
I am in love with him.
Yeah.
What else are we talking about?
Well, I guess like now that we've talked about kind of our favourite ones in the collections, ones that we've seen and things, probably this is the point to jump in and say our recommendations or things that we think should be in the collection or maybe underrepresented in the collection or...
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
So
well, you've told me that you've got heaps, so...
I do. I kind of over-prepared for this one and... What an almost page full.
Fucking alright.
Alright, so I figure I'll go into. I'll start off with the ones that I think are kind of underrepresented in the collection, I guess.
Oh, hang on. If Tom's only got a few, let him go first. Because if you've already got them, then it'll get to his turn. He'll be like,
"Oh, what? Yeah,
what?
Okay,
you already said
what
mine."
Oh, okay, yeah, no. Okay, yeah, that's actually a good idea. So if you want to take the idea,
okay.
Turn, go
for it.
Because
I've got a feeling that you probably will have already had some of these in your list.
No, well,
and you'll definitely
possibly
when I
well definitely won there. Yeah,
last year,
yep.
I watched It's Such a Beautiful Day by Don Hertzfeldt.
Yes,
but I didn't realize that came out quite a few years ago.
Yeah, that's like he got like three of his previous short films that was a continuing trilogy and melded them together into a 50-minute film.
Mm.
Yeah,
And I'd seen Don Hertzfeldt stuff previously, like the Rejected stuff, his first works, where it was his creations in film school about a fictional group of advertisements where just gets like it's totally weird and retarded, and it's the an animator going insane over the course of several adverts.
Academy Award nominated short, that one, actually,
true,
as well.
True. So I was kind of familiar with his work already, but It's Such a Beautiful Day was kind of so beautiful and bittersweet and challenging.
Yeah.
That I just fell in love with it. And I was going to put that in. The moment I saw it, I was like, this is something that I would be recommending when we get to the 100th episode.
Yeah.
But I thought, if you're going to if you're going to have a Criterion Collection edition of something like Don Hertzfeldt film, why wouldn't you just put all of his work in as special features and all that sort of shit? And I think last week you were saying that he's doing this.
Well, I might even give him a flat-out ad for this, because it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that he's done. I actually had him on my list as well.
I don't have many recommendations.
Yeah, with his latest film, World of Tomorrow, which, as of the day we were recording this, I just actually got announced today that it got nominated for an Academy Award as well, which is fucking fantastic for him, and congratulations. But what he did earlier this year, or sorry, late last year, it's now 2015, I forget we're in a new year. What he did last year was he started a Kickstarter that was a campaign to get It's Such a Beautiful Day and this new film, World of Tomorrow, released on a Blu-ray. And he set a very modest goal, and I think by the end of it, he'd gotten 8 times what he was aiming for. And so every time they'd hit a new goal, he would just add more and more and more of his short film. So pretty much every single thing he's ever produced is going to be on this Blu-ray. And it is still... the Kickstarter campaign is done, obviously, like that finished up. But they have added a link onto the Kickstarter page that does say, if you missed out on this campaign and you would want a copy of this Blu-ray, you can still buy one here.
Yeah, which I would love to get. Because it'll have... I mean, World of Tomorrow, if you haven't seen that, is really brilliant about a little 4-year-old Emily.
Yeah.
Who was transported into the far future by a clone of her future self.
Four times removed?
And it's an odd exploration of life and death. And it's interesting because it's all Emily's voice is just recordings of Hertzfeldt's 4-year-old niece.
Yeah.
And then she was playing and drawing and stuff like that, and she would be recorded, and then her recordings would be kind of strung together, and they would produce this character Emily in the little film. And this one is, I mean,
it's
on par with It's Such a Beautiful Day, probably, I mean, arguably better.
Yeah, I think he will finally win his Academy Award for this film. It is
a
wonderful piece of animation. And if... that was one of my suggestions for something I think would have been a lovely addition into the collection, would have been the works of Don Hertzfeldt.
Yeah, essentially this Blu-ray that's coming out.
Yeah, but Don Hertzfeldt himself has already gone ahead
and created this.
So, I mean, shit, if you would want that version, it's still available. If you go to Kickstarter and look up for the Project Hertzfeldt on Blu-ray, you can still get a copy through there, and it's probably the equivalent of what it would be in the collection, so.
Oh, because he's super fucking influential.
Yeah.
A lot of imitators. Again, it's like that strangeness for Stranger Snake, but he's able to
meld it into art, and
meld it into something that has a tremendous amount of humanity in it.
And incredibly thought-provoking, and what he does in particular with things like Rejected is he's pushing the medium of animation to a new level, I think, as well. Like, he's a true artist that I think deserves,
If you haven't watched any of his stuff, definitely get into it.
Yep.
I mean, he even did, there's like the Simpsons couch gag.
Yes, yeah.
It's just like a 2-minute, it's just the Simpsons couch gag at the start of the episode, but it goes for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And Homer finds a remote control that allows you to pass through time. Initially, he goes back into 1987 with the original character models, and then he gets spit out into this future universe where the Simpsons is now the Samsons.
And it's weird, like
these odd Simpson-looking creatures are just like spouting catchphrases mindlessly. These odd fucking things. So it's odd and wonderful.
Yeah. So no, I wholeheartedly agree that that is a very welcome addition.
So what's one of yours?
Yeah, I'll start with the ones that I think are kind of underrepresented or things that I think should be added. There are a couple of Jim Jarmusch films in the collection. I think he's got 3 or 4 in there at the moment. I know he's got like Stranger Than Paradise, Mystery Train, Night on Earth,
mm-hmm.
kind of those ones. But I would absolutely love to get Dead Man or Ghost Dog, or just go to that extreme of getting, fuck it, just let's get all the Jim Jarmusch films in there, because I think he's...
Ghost Dog is very good.
Yeah, he's one of those kind of indie American film directors that I think is really wonderful, and I'd like to see him... If they do it with Wes Anderson, where they get all of his films in the collection, fuck it, let's go for Jarmusch. Let's go for someone who is also influential
yeah.
in terms of American independent cinema.
And it doesn't seem like it can't happen, because... I mean,
no.
Ghost Dog's not in. I remember that coming out, and it was very popular for, you know,
yeah.
For an indie film.
Yeah. And also some other stuff like Broken Flowers is great, Coffee and Cigarettes, like he's got a whole bunch of work that'd be good. Some other directors similar to that I think are really underrepresented in the collection is Billy Wilder, I think, needs to have more in the collection. He's only got one in there at the moment, Ace in the Hole, which is a fucking amazing film. But Billy Wilder is one of the greatest directors that's ever lived. Like, he's on the realm of, like, David Lean. So, I know it's one of those things where it would never happen because I think rights issues, but it'd be great to get shit like Double Indemnity or Sunset Boulevard or
mm-hmm.
The Apartment. Like, all of these classic, like, 1940s, 1950s Hollywood films in there, I think.
Yeah.
And then there's a few modern directors, I think. You know, we finally have a David Lynch film and a Coen Brothers movie in there. With Eraserhead and Inside Llewyn Davis, it'd be nice to see them get a few more in there. Kind of maybe some of their weirder, lesser known stuff, like with Lynch, maybe Wild at Heart or Lost Highway, and with the Coen brothers, like A Serious Man or Barton Fink. Kind of, they're more, it's kind of subtler films, I guess.
What, I guess, like, but these films are all, like, they're pretty well, I mean, this is the thing, I think we're going to keep coming back to this, is these recommendations is. Some of these are great films that should be recognised as great films.
Yes.
And they are. They
yeah.
are. I mean, amongst the circles that count,
yeah.
they are recognised as great films, great additions to the medium, you know, like, and it's fine, but, it's interesting because you don't have, it's harder to make recommendations based off what should be in the collection
yeah.
versus what can be in the collection.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Well, on that note, I've got, like, the kind of my big main selection for what I think can and should be in the collection
mm-hmm.
is I think Criterion should somehow get together and make a collection of Jafar Panahi films.
What is that?
Jafar Panahi is a Iranian film director who was arrested and put under house arrest.
Oh, I heard about this.
And was sentenced to... He was not allowed to create art for 20 years. So what he ended up doing was he made a film called This Is Not a Film, where it's a pseudo-documentary where he got a friend of his to come around, and what he did was he read the screenplay for the film that he wanted to make and kind of mapped out in his living room like how he would make it and stuff, and his friend's shooting him on like a little camcorder as he's explaining how he would create his art if he could create his art.
Oh my god.
And by doing that, creates this other film. And what they ended up doing was they smuggled the film out of... This is all true. They smuggled the finished copy of this film, because he co-directed it.
Mm-hmm.
They smuggled it out of the country on a USB hidden inside a cake and premiered it at the Cannes Film Festival, I believe. And yeah, he has now gone on to do this 2 more times. Creating kind of
he's
films
still,
without
still under
films.
House arrest.
Yes. Oh no, he's no longer under house arrest. This Is Not a Film was first done when he was under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's allowed to kind of go out in the city and things, but he's still not allowed to create art. He still has that embargo on him. His most recent one is called Taxi. I saw it last year at the Melbourne Film Festival. It was called Tehran Taxi. You'll either find it under Taxi or Tehran Taxi. And what he's done this time is he's going around the city pretending to be a cab driver, but he's mounted cameras in the cab. And he's going around picking up people and, like, interacting with them. And the whole time, you don't know if this is real or not, or if it's set up, or if this is all scripted.
Is there actors?
Yeah, or if this is totally real, and he's just... Because he's not allowed to make art. You don't know what is real and what's not. And I won't kind of do a spoiler thing and tell you how it ends, but it ends on a very fucking real note that involves the government thing. Like, it's very fucking interesting, and it's kind of... I think that would be a wonderful kind of three-pack if they put out the films of Jafar Panahi while he's under this art embargo. So it would be, this is not a film, Closed Curtain, and Taxi.
Sweet, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. That's kind of my recommendation.
Fucking oath.
Yeah.
All right. Back to me. I'm going to suggest Fantastic Planet, the French film.
Yep.
Have
the animation?
Yeah. I mean, actually, this is the only other one I have.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to put in Pink Floyd's Light of Pompeii.
Oh, yeah.
But we already talked about that last week, so I'm not going to... Because there's not many concert films. Let's talk about that, actually.
No, there are a few. We've got the entire Monterey Pop coming up. Yeah, there's a box set that is the Monterey Pop Festival, like that famous one where Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar on fire.
Oh, okay, yes.
That you've got there's a box set that's, I think, 4 or 5 different concerts from that festival.
Is there anything else?
There's Head, which is the Monkees film. Hard Day's Night, which is... those two are more films than concert stuff.
Yeah,
but they are music based.
I'm interested in... I mean, I did like Gimme Shelter, and that is a concert, sort of.
Yeah.
But it's not really... Like, I'd like to see... What I'm saying is I'd like to see a concert experience represented in the Criterion. And often they are stories that have... The ones that have been presented in the Criterion Collection are stories that happen to be set at a concert.
Yeah.
As opposed to an actual concert. And Pink Floyd tends to do the concert experience on DVD really well.
Yeah.
I already spoke about Live at Pompeii last week, but that's definitely one of the best concert experience DVDs you can get.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more music stuff.
That would be good.
Beastie Boys was good, but
yeah.
The concerts and stuff like that.
Hmm.
Anyway, Fantastic Planet is a huge cult film.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you want to get the record, the vinyl soundtrack, which is really good soundtrack.
I found it today, actually, when I was out record hunting.
Did you get it?
No, I did not.
How much was it?
38?
That's very cheap.
Yeah.
My brother went to a fair, record fair, and it was there for like fucking $200 or something.
It wasn't an original, it was a repressing. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it was
a
reissue.
So highly collectible soundtrack, because the soundtrack's phenomenal.
Yes.
All this like really great 70s prog rock stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so deliciously odd again.
Yeah.
Where it's not, it was nominated for what was it? I think the Grand Jury Prize at Cannes in 73 or whatever.
72, 73, something like that.
And it's just it's so affecting because you have humans trapped on a planet, being treated like essentially mindless animals by this giant alien society. And there's heaps of themes going on in it.
Being
racism and speciesism.
By children and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so confronting, but and psychedelic too. Like, it's just such an odd beast of a film.
Hmm.
That's one of the best sci-fi films I think you can find, really.
Hmm.
So that's another one. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look at that one.
Yeah, that also leads into the thing of there's not much animation in the collection as well.
That's why I wanted to choose the animation.
Yeah. I know recently they put out Watership Down, which is a fucking wonderful animated film. But other than that, I'm actually kind of struggling to think of any others.
It's so odd as well, because it's such an important piece of the film pie.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's totally underrepresented. There'd be countless other ones. I mean, even putting in Japanese films, like I got right here, The Castle of Cagliostro.
Yeah.
Is there any Ghibli at all?
No.
No, there's no Ghibli.
Again, that thing of, in the US, Disney owns the distribution rights to Ghibli. So.
Well, I think you, in order for recommendations, you've got to ignore the what can and can't
the logistics of what could. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
Well, Madman owns the rights to Castle Cagliostro since it's
That's
for distribution here, but
for Australia. There's no anime as well. Like, even it'd be nice to see some stuff like the classic films of anime, like Akira or Ghost in the Shell or even Ninja Scroll. Like,
Exactly, man. That to me seems nutty that there's no anime at all.
Heavy Metal, that'd be a great one.
Yeah, I like that as a kid, but it's just
no, it holds up. It's so good. It's so weird.
Okay.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Well, what about like even
the 2001? That one is
no. Bad. Or even some of the Ralph Bakshi kind of stuff, like Wizards, or Fritz the Cat, maybe.
Yeah,
I know. Because that'd be interesting because you could then get into like some documentary features that would be discussing the idea of like how Ralph Bakshi, this wonderful animator, tried to make a film version of the cartoonist R. Crumb's Fritz the Cat, and how it R. Crumb like disowned the character after that, and like the kind of battle that went on around that. That could be interesting shit.
Yeah, man. I wonder if it's, I mean,
it's probably not high on their priority list given how many other, like, all the other shit they've had to tackle, like with getting, you know, all this different gems of world cinema known and out there. I guess it's not, animation is probably not, there's no real kind of key animated films other than, I would say, Fantastic Planet that is like on top of their list, I guess.
I suppose it still seems strange because if they want to encapsulate you know, the movement of film,
yes,
then you really got to give credit to a lot of animations.
Sure.
Anyway, it might be. I know that a lot of people consider anime to be kind of like a lesser form of art, if you want to say that.
That's stupid.
And I think that's unfounded.
Yeah.
But it's there's definitely a thing where people won't watch
animated
films and take them in as seriously as, you know, your higher quote higher forms of art.
Yeah.
But that might be dying off because, like, I know that the previous generation, my parents don't even give a shit about watching animations at all.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about mainstream audiences. But this generation's pretty fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's possibly because we grew up with good animation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also the fact that Studio Ghibli is starting to get recognised in the Western mainstream culture, like Spirited Away.
Winning the Academy Award and
that's
things,
it.
Yeah.
And that work got a lot of people interested in this, what's this anime?
Yeah.
A lot of people I know, like, who exist in the mainstream world, will say that they really liked Spirited Away. But you ask them how they feel about anime, and they still have that reaction of like, oh no, it's for children, it's weird Japanese cartoons.
Yeah.
But they like Spirited Away.
Yeah. Like, no, but that,
there's still that sort of thing. Like, it is slowly, like, Ghibli, thankfully, is sort of bringing wonderful,
it's blazing
anime
a trail.
Down.
Yeah.
It is slowly being introduced to the mainstream, but unfortunately, it's going to be a slow process.
I think
there's still a lot of people just like, anime?
Good. That's just a lot of flashing lights and seizure robots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
I love those
like,
things.
Like, what?
Though.
Like, Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
And like,
No. You don't know.
No. And I'm like, no, like Spirited Away. You like Spirited Away, right? They're like, yeah, but that's different.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's anime.
But I could see how if you, like, went from something like Spirited Away to put on, like something like Akira, I know, is, like, you know, here, like,
it's
you've enjoyed this.
Jarring.
Yeah, nice, happy, wonderful family film. Let's like absolutely melt your cerebral cortex, like with existential ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but fucking wonderful. So, yeah.
Alright.
Get more animated films, Criterion.
Yeah. I'll try at least. I don't care.
Is The Raid in there?
No.
The Raid should be in there.
The Raid isn't very known in the US, which it's got a cult following. But that's why I find...
It's made by a Canadian, isn't it?
No, but he lives in... And he emigrated to...
Oh, okay.
Indonesia.
Okay.
But it's... That's why it boggled my mind when everyone gave the new Judge Dredd film, Dredd, like, such incredible reviews. And I was just like, but it's The Raid. Like, they've just literally done The Raid. Mm. And The Raid is better. Like,
The Raid is awesome. The Raid has made my top... Like, my top five favourite films of all time.
And the fact that he was able to continue that on with The Raid 2, which was equally It was a different film, but
it was
so fucking good.
It was,
but he was
almost
doing something
as good, but it's so hard to be as good as the first.
Yeah,
the first,
but he tried to do something different with it. Yeah, at least. But yeah.
But you're right with that Dread thing. I don't know. That didn't really kick off here. That Dread film.
No, because everyone, I think it's because we're so close to Indonesia that we got The Raid when it came out and everyone fucking saw The Raid.
Yeah, mainstreamers saw The Raid.
Yeah, because I think it's geographically we're so close to Indonesia and we've got a big Indonesian population. It just somehow seeped into our culture here in Australia.
Yeah,
and The Raid is...
Yeah, and the few people who did know that it was an independent, you know, Indonesian film, there was that sense of supporting the local sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I know a lot of mainstreamers who went to see it because they're like, oh, it's a small independent Indonesian film. I'll go see it. And they hated it because they're mainstreamers.
And they didn't like the most extreme of violence.
No, they didn't understand that. I just don't understand violence. Like, that's ridiculous. And I'm like, I think it's the most wonderful raw thing I've ever seen.
That being said, though, J.J. Abrams gave the dudes from The Raid a cameo in Star Wars, so...
Yeah, what the fuck?
I guess, you know, people that... It might be slowly seeping in, hopefully, but... Yeah. On the note of...
There's the kind of opposing smuggler team.
Yeah, who kind of come into...
I was so excited.
Yeah, I know, right?
I was so excited. I think you and I were the other ones who recognised
them. No, and Chris Barker as well. He was like, oh my god, it's the guys from The Raid. You're like, oh, what the fuck?
That broke immersion in that.
Yeah, that was the one part where I was just like, yep.
My immersion was completely shattered.
I loved it, though. I loved it that it was there. It was so bizarre. It was such an odd little homage moment. And I was like, yeah, this is... All right.
Cool. I'm with this.
Yeah. But for anyone who hasn't seen The Raid, or hasn't heard of The Raid, do go out and see it if you can handle yourself some hardcore...
Siege Kung Fu.
Oh my god, so good.
Yeah,
so
and then good. The second one is almost like The Departed, almost. It's like Infiltration.
Yeah.
Equal amounts of insane violence and wonderful fight choreography. And
they're
fucking great movies.
The first one is raw.
Yeah.
The first one is just raw awesomeness.
Second one is very calculated film. Equally brutal, but like very slow, and the first one's an action film, the second one's a crime thriller.
Yes.
Yeah. On the note of Indonesian cinema is actually one of my other suggestions.
Yeah.
Which is I'm kind of going for the box sets or the double packs here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for Criterion to release The Act of Killing and The Look of Silence.
Oh.
Which are two documentaries by Joshua Oppenheimer that are about the genocide that happened in Indonesia back in the 1980s, I think. No, the 1970s. They're fucking brutal films to watch, but I think they are important films.
I didn't finish them.
Because
they're just so upsetting.
I
didn't have the stomach.
They are insanely important documentaries, and I think...
Explain the first one at the very least.
So, the first one, what the Act of Killing is, there was this genocide that was kind of... the government overthrown and genocide in Indonesia, and what this man, what this filmmaker has done is he'd spent years researching and talking to people, and eventually got to a point where he was interviewing and hanging out with one of the guys who led one of the death squads. And he came up and he was intrigued by the way that the men that murdered all of these people were so casual about what they'd done that he wanted to try and get this man to express the horrible things that he had done and the acts of killing he'd committed. And by doing that, he got him to recreate them in a chosen film's style of his choice. And they end up making a gangster film, a musical, a western. It's fucking fascinating, and it's a look into the psyche of someone who is capable of disconnecting themselves so much to help commit genocide.
Just Cold-Blooded Killer, the movie.
Yeah, but it's insanely fascinating. And at the same time, it also looks into the politics that allowed this to happen in a country. He ended up interviewing the vice president of Indonesia in this film as well. When this film was released, I was really, really lucky in 2015 and got to go see The Look of Silence, the sequel film, Well, not the sequel, the sister film to this at the festival, and he was there and talked before it, and I actually got to have a chat with him one-on-one, which was amazing, and then got to see him do a big kind of hour-and-a-half long talk about it all. He's now banned from Indonesia, or he knows if he steps foot in Indonesia, he will never leave Indonesia again. He's gets death threats on a daily basis and things from people there. It's very interesting. And the second film...
Frightening,
but he's very kind of like, yeah, no, I knew this was all going to happen, so he's very calm about it.
Jesus Christ.
And The Look of Silence, so the act of killing looks at the genocide on a kind of very global scale, like on a countrywide scale, and how it affected the country, and The Look of Silence is focused in on one individual family. And what he'd done with the years of researching he'd spent kind of looking into this, and how he got eventually to the top people that he talked about and looked at in the act of killing, he goes back and he looks at the lower level people, and in particular this one family he knew and kind of stayed with there, and this one man, Adi, who this all happened right before he was born, actually, and his older brother was taken away and murdered. And so what The Look of Silence is, it's Adi going around talking to the individuals that murdered his brother and the people in his village and confronting them, and the idea of an entire village kind of turning a blind eye to these atrocities that happened, and this small scale, like the genocide, but on a small scale. It's one man going and saying, like, how do you as an individual, like, kind of feel about this? And it's fucking fascinating and
confrontational.
Not as confrontational, I found, as The Look of Silence, as The Act of Killing. A little bit more of a quieter, sadder film. It's how this giant act, like, you know, this horrible thing affected one family.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really... They're two, I think, very important films that highlight something that happened in a country's history that is not really talked about. So, and kind of swept under the rug. So, yeah.
Fucking sobering.
Yeah, that's my depressing recommendation.
It's a really sobering discussion, man.
Yeah.
It's very hard. Yeah, it's they're brilliant, but yeah, super hard to watch.
Yeah. So those are my recommendations.
Fucking hell.
The other one, I had a jokey one.
There's
on my
poor
list.
People that are gonna take that out into the show and watch those movies.
No, but they are fucking important films, I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
They need to be seen.
Oh yeah.
I did have one like lighthearted jokey one that is like my...
Was it Hook? Or for Thelonite?
No, because those films can go suck a bag of dicks.
No, but on the other hand, like they're
awesome.
Pretty good.
We're going to get into this later. We have actually decided coming up this year, we are going to do a couple of commentary track podcasts. The idea of which is we're going to sit down and watch Hook, and Cole and Tom and our friend Toby, who's been on this podcast a few times, we're going to sit down and watch Hook, record a commentary where they have to try and convince me that it's a good film.
And I didn't know that was going to be like a commentary track. I thought that was going to be like a flat-out debate.
It'll be a debate.
It's clearly a debate.
Yeah, while we're watching the film, I think.
It's purely come from like years of us like just teasing you.
Yeah.
Teasing you about the fact that you hate Hook
and
Fifth Element.
And so I think we're going to try and find a few where, I know the three of us don't like Django Unchained. And Toby thinks that's one of Tarantino's best films, so he wants to have that debate with us. So we've got a few kind of...
Yeah, and then there's also a reversal as well, where I struggled with Kubrick and P.T. Anderson. I think Tom was saying he wanted to get me on one of those.
Yep.
And which is fine. I don't think they're bad films, they're just not to my taste.
Yep.
Well, let's discuss that in a later
commentary
track, huh?
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that, for those sometime soon in 2016. But yeah, I don't know. Did you have any more recommendations or kind of suggestions, or is that did you have any? I mean, The Raids, you said.
Yeah, yeah, The Raid, and I agree with Tom with Don Hertzfeldt. I haven't really put much time or thought into it. What'll happen is that in the weeks after this, now I'll be thinking of like hundreds of things. Going, oh my god, that.
Yeah.
Well,
but definitely anime.
Yeah.
There should be anime Ghibli. There should be Hertzfeldt, and there should be... I think The Raid is worth a watch, even if it doesn't make Criterion.
Yeah.
It should be seen.
Save them for the next 200.
Yeah. Just start just compiling a list.
Yeah,
that's fair enough. The other... the question I wanted to put to you guys is that you've discussed your
favourites of the last 100, the things that you've, the hidden gems and the great films that you think should be in the collection, what would you, what do you believe, not just that you hated, not that you just didn't enjoy, but what do you, what films in the last 100 do you actually think don't belong there? Not just that it was shit.
Yep,
Armageddon. Armageddon does not belong in that.
Disagree.
I disagree.
Because
it still stands for a genre of film.
Exactly.
That is popular and well loved.
Because, and like,
where's anime then?
Well,
again,
well,
that's why we're saying
that.
Yeah.
It should
but
be there.
Armageddon should be in the collection because it represents big dumb summer blockbuster. You have smart action films represented in the collection with things like RoboCop or Hardboiled and the Killer, the John Woo films. You need that dumb Hollywood blockbuster to be at least represented once.
Is but the logic, the character motivations are muddled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a it's not a movie that's been put together incredibly well, is it?
I think that's the point of why it kind of belongs in the criterion, because it is the epitome of an entire genre of film. This isn't a one-off. This isn't an anomaly film. This is the beginning of the Michael Bay era.
It's the beginning. It's what we know as modern-day cinema.
Yeah.
Shit like fucking Jurassic World being the fourth highest-grossing film of all time.
Okay.
Like, why is that a thing that it happened?
Avatar happened, you know? It's that kind of thing where that's it. It speaks for
it's why we have 7 Fast and the Furious films.
Yeah. it speaks for a section of cinema history that, like it or not, is there.
And which is enjoyed by the majority of the population of Earth.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
now you know how I feel about Kubrick.
Okay.
I don't get it. I don't like it, but people love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
My one that I think shouldn't be in the collection is The Magic Flute. Because...
the Mozart one.
Yes. Because I think it's in the collection because it's Bergman.
Okay.
Because it's by Ingmar Bergman. It was nothing but a filmed representation of a play. It was not well constructed, it was not well shot, and it was not well edited, and I don't think it represented the play well.
It didn't need to be a film.
No, and the only reason I think it's in the collection is the same reason why Darjeeling Limited is in the collection. Because it's Wes Anderson,
mm-hmm.
because it's Ingmar Bergman, it's not a good film, and it's in there just because the filmmaker made it.
Alright, well that's a pretty good argument.
Well, in that sense then, so are there any films that you think do represent a play very well? Were there any in there that represented a play? There was
The Red Shoes plays with that.
Yeah.
With the kind of the theatre. There's several that do that.
12 Angry Men is in the collection, which is a perfect
representation
of a play. But, I mean, we haven't watched that. We haven't gotten to that one yet.
But it is in the collection.
Yeah.
On that note, I was going to suggest 1,000 Clowns, which I'm sure was a stage show as well. I got Tom to watch.
Clowns, man.
The Jason Robards film.
That is fabulous.
If for no other reason than
incredible movie.
Jason Robards being absolutely charming, Marty Belsom being a lot of fun, and just the kid who plays Nick in it is amazing. The performance of this kid just outshines everyone in that film.
That's a film
and
that theoretically could be in the collection. Like, that's one that is, I'm sure, the writer.
It has its downfalls.
Yeah.
It has some moments that you just go, that's bad filmmaking there,
but we've seen a lot of that in the collection already. So.
But there's some, I love it because there's something about it that's the humor is very, very modern to me, very dry, and just wonderful performances. And if you haven't seen it, try and look it up. It's hard to find.
Yeah,
I think the winning point is Robards' character.
So charming.
He is a man that knows the importance of shooting for pushing aside work and earning money for the sake of creativity and love.
Breaking free.
Yeah.
So it's a very refreshing character.
Plus it's Jason fucking Robards.
Jason fucking Robards.
It's super funny though.
Yeah.
I wet myself watching that. I didn't expect to find it as funny as I did.
Nice.
What else? I don't know.
Yeah, what do you think doesn't belong in the collection so far?
We said Armageddon and we kind of shut that
down. Yeah, we shut me down with Armageddon.
But
look,
no,
you made some good points.
That's fair enough.
Don't worry about that. What else is there?
Why do you think Sid and Nancy?
Oh, we didn't like that film at all.
We didn't like it at all, but
on
why?
Recollection.
Did we ever agree on why it was there? Does it belong there, or was it because it...
It's very hard to formulate.
I think, yeah.
It's really hard to formulate.
Because that's one of the low points in this 100.
And it was early on as well, yeah.
It was a low point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, but that... it's hard to formulate why it shouldn't be in the collection. I mean, you've made a very good argument for the films we were just talking about, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
if you're trying to say this Sid and Nancy shouldn't be in,
it's gonna be a puppy. It's like,
yeah,
hating on something. It's
okay,
like it's hating on something that's already.
What I mean then is, I'm struggling because it's been a long time since I've seen it. But even still, I struggle to find a reason why it is there. I can't think of a good reason why it does belong in the Criterion. What does it offer? What does it stand for?
I think the only thing it offers is the first Gary Oldman performance.
But that in itself is not worthy
of an entry in the collection.
It doesn't make it like classic in film history.
Yeah, the reason why it is in the collection is because I think it's one of those ones Criterion owned the rights to when they started producing DVDs. So that's
why. It's not good enough, Criterion.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not good enough.
But you could always just shoehorn some kind of get out of jail free card for any of the movies that are in the collection. You know, it's Sid and Nancy as a snapshot of punk culture in the 80s.
Yeah,
no,
and
we discussed that, and no, it isn't. Clearly made by a person who didn't understand the culture, therefore
yes,
it's
like,
not a snapshot.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know, but
it's a complete misrepresentation.
Okay. Yeah.
Alright. It's a complete misrepresentation of, of punk culture. Therefore, it's required in the collection. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
You could just
apply that to anything, but
you could think of anything to say about.
I still don't think it validates.
Even the magic flute, you could put, like, if you had some smart critic, you'd just
be like, yeah. Well, that's it. At the end of the day,
throw words at it until it makes sense.
Like that's it. Like at the end of the day, the way we've thought about all the films that we've watched so far and the way in which we've reviewed them and things, it's all our personal opinions. Like, I mean, the clearest example of that is, like, we did not fucking get Andrei Rublev.
Yeah.
And that is considered one of the greatest pieces of cinema. And we just are like, nope.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe when we're older and we go back to it?
I don't ever plan on going back to it.
Okay.
But it's a thing of, like, it's... A film, like any art, is totally subjective. So... For the reasons that we might not like Sid and Nancy, someone may absolutely love it. So it is that kind of give and take thing.
Maybe
so.
It's literally in the Criterion just for those last 20 minutes.
Possibly.
Because they were great.
Yeah. Okay. The kind of the total dissension, yeah.
Mm.
Possibly.
That's all.
Mm.
If that's good enough reason, put it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently.
But I don't know, I guess should we wrap up this extremely masturbatory episode by chance?
That's a yes.
Actually, I know you're running out of time, but I want to ask a question. You can cut it out if you want.
Yep.
What was the film that you not just had the most fun watching, but what was your what did you have the most fun recording the podcast for, regardless of what the movie was? What was the most fun podcast recording you can remember doing?
I reckon Armageddon for me.
Armageddon was pretty fun. Fun is an interesting one. I think I had a lot of fun doing All That Heaven Allows, just because it ended up just being a gush fest for Rock Hudson, where Tom and I ended up questioning our sexuality almost.
Almost.
But I think my favorite one, I think, is Autumn Sonata. Because when we started recording that episode, we had opinions on the film and we didn't like it. But through the discussion and conversation that we had in the episode, we ended up dissecting what the film was about, and by the end of that episode, we had totally turned around on that film. May not love that film, but, like, understood and appreciated that film, and we managed to get there through discussion. And hear that happen in that episode, and I think that was...
That's a highlight.
Pretty great.
I also, the Insomnia one, where, I mean, it ended up being...
Fuck you, Al Pacino's
better. Yeah, it became a love fest for the Christopher Nolan remake.
Yeah.
But what was so wonderful about that is you get time and time again, everyone says, the original's better. But after discussion, it was really the first time I can think of where we critically analysed both films and made a very good argument for for the remake actually really provided much more of a complete experience.
Yeah.
And so that was also a highlight.
Yeah.
As well.
I found Walkabout, like, because I'm just talking about, for me it was the most fun.
Yep.
For some reason, Walkabout sticks out as the most fun recording I had with you guys.
Mm.
It's also interesting, I felt like we really, really discussed that film. Like, I felt like we had left no stone unturned in discussing that. We analysed and discussed every moment of it. And it was a lot of fun, because it's a really dense film, too. Like, there's a lot happening.
And it's very visually driven as well. And there's, not much in the way of story, and it is just you. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other one I'd say I had the, probably the most fun recording was what was the one with
the Dangerous Game?
Oh, that was fun. No, that was good, but not as fun as one we did with Lee and
the summertime.
Oh, Summertime.
That was
we made that tourism video for Vienna.
We just went on our own tangent.
That was a bit of a mess of it. Of an episode, but it was very fun.
We went on our own tangent with that film. We really took it somewhere that didn't even exist. We had this whole backstory, these whole subplots and these characters.
Right.
I had the most fun with Summertime recording.
Yeah.
It was batshit crazy.
That was a fun one. We need to get Lee back on some more episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah.
I miss her. That's actually a good point. We should give a nice little shout out to Lee, Eric, Simon, Mike, Toby, all the people that have kind of popped up on episodes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
It's been great.
Yeah, and thank you to those who have actually suffered through and listened to any and all of our episodes. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, circle jerk over.
Yeah. If you have any comments or queries, and that's my one thing I've figured. I'm going to, next week, I'm going to come up with a new intro and a new kind of bullshitty outro where we work out.
I was like, the season two. Like,
yeah, this is it. Yeah, we need to mix it up a little bit. So that was the last time I'm going to do that. Welcome to the Criterion.
All right.
But, yeah, again, thank you so much for listening to these episodes, and hopefully we can maintain for the next 100.
Send in your 700.
Yeah, actually, that's a good thing. If you have any suggestions of things that should be in the collection, or things that are underrepresented, I should say, send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com, or send them to us at Twitter @CriterionQuest. But once again, thank you, and we'll be back next week when we actually have a film to talk about. We're back into the sad world of Bergman with Cries and Whispers.
Oh.
Yeah. For this week's episode, I'm Chris.
I'm Tom.
I'm Cole.
See you next time. Like 100 times. 100 times.